So, where are we going?
Not far, Reacher said.
Can't you tell us?
I'm going to park next to the Ford you burned.
What? Just up there?
I said not far.
And then what?
Then I'm going to set this car on fire.
The two men glanced at each other, not understanding. The one who had spoken before said,
You're going to drive with us in the back, like loose?
You can put your seatbelts on if you like, but it's hardly worth it. It's not very far. And I'm a careful driver. I won't have an accident.
The guy said, But...
And then nothing more.
I know, Reacher said. I'll have my back turned. You could jump me.
Well, yes. But you won't.
Why not?
You just won't. I know it.
Why wouldn't we?
Because you'll be dead, Reacher said.
And he shot the first guy in the forehead, and then the second. A brisk double tap, no pause. Bang, bang. No separation at all. The rear window shattered, and blood and bone and brain hit the remains of the glass, delayed, slower than the bullets. And the two guys settled peacefully, slower still, like afterthoughts, like old people falling asleep, but with open eyes and fat beads of purple welling out of the neat holes in their brows, welling and lengthening and becoming slow, lazy trickles that ran down to the bridges of their noses. Reacher backed out of the car and straightened up and looked north.
9mm parabellums.
Fine ammunition.
The two slugs were probably hitting the ground right about then, a mile farther on, burning their way into the frigid dirt. Reacher checked room 7 and found a wallet in a coat. There was a Nevada driver's license in it, made out in the name of Roberto Cassano at a local Las Vegas address. There were 4 credit cards and a little more than $90 in cash. Reacher took 60 and got in the Impala and drove 40 yards and parked tight up against the shell of the Ford. He gave the $60 to Vincent in the lounge. 2 rooms, 1 night. And then he borrowed rags and matches, and as soon as the fuse was set in the Chevy's filler neck, he hustled back to the Tahoe he had left on the shoulder. The first major flames were showing as he drove by, and he saw the fuel tank go up in his mirror about 400 yards later. The angle he was at and the way the fireball rose and then smoked and died made the motel sign look real, like it was a genuine working rocket, like it was blasting off for the infinite emptiness of space. Eldridge Tyler heard the gunshots. 2 faint pops, rapid, a double tap, very distant, really nothing more than vague percussive holes in the winter air. Not a rifle, not a shotgun. Tyler knew firearms, and he knew the way their sounds traveled across the land. A handgun, he thought, 3 or 4 miles away. Maybe the hunt was over. Maybe the big man was down. He moved again, easing one leg, easing the other, stretching one arm, stretching the other, rolling his shoulders, rotating his neck. He dug into his canvas tote bag and came out with a bottle of water and a brown bread sandwich. He put both items within easy reach. Then he peered out through the space left by the missing louver, and he took a careful look around, because maybe the big man wasn't down. Tyler took nothing for granted. He was a cautious man. His job was to watch and wait, and watch and wait he would, until he was told different. He leaned up on his hands and craned around and looked behind him. The sun had moved a little south of east, and low, slanting light was falling on the shelter's entrance. The tripwires, plastic insulation, had dewed over with dawn mist and was glistening faintly. 10 minutes, Tyler thought, before it dried and went invisible again. He turned back and lay flat, then snuggled behind the scope again, and he put his finger on the trigger. Chapter 54. Dorothy Coe used the guest bathroom and showered fast, ready for work at the motel. She stopped in the kitchen to drink coffee and eat toast with the doctor and his wife, and then she changed her mind about her destination. She asked,
"Where did Reacher go?"
The doctor said,
"I'm not sure." "He must have told you."
"He's working on a theory.
He knows something now. I can feel it."
The doctor said nothing. Dorothy Coe asked,
"Where did he go?"
The doctor said,
"The old barn."
Dorothy Coe said,
"Then that's where I'm going too."
The doctor said,
"Don't."
Reacher drove south on the two-lane road and coasted to a stop 1,000 yards beyond the barn. It stood on the dirt a mile away to the west, close to its smaller companion, crisp in the light, canted down at one corner like it was kneeling. Reacher got out and grasped the roof bar and stood on the seat and hauled himself up and stood straight, like he had before on the doctor's Subaru, but higher this time, because the Tahoe was taller. He turned a slow circle, the sun in his eyes one way, his shadow immense the other. He saw the motel in the distance to the north, and the 3 Duncan houses in the distance to the south. Nothing else. No people, no vehicles. Nothing was stirring. He stepped down on the hood and jumped down to the ground. He ignored the tractor ruts and walked straight across the dirt, a direct line, homing in, aiming for the gap between the barn and the smaller shelter. Eldridge Tyler heard the truck, just the whisper of faraway tires on coarse blacktop, the hiss of exhaust through a catalytic converter, the muted thrash of turning components all barely audible in the absolute rural silence. He heard it stop. He heard it stay where it was. It was a mile away, he thought. It was not one of the Duncans with a message. They would come all the way, or call on the phone. It was not the shipment, either. Not yet. The shipment was still hours away. He rolled on his side and looked back at the tripwire. He rehearsed the necessary moves in his head. Should someone come? Snatch back the rifle, roll on his hip, sit up, swivel around, and fire point blank.